Good morning to all of you who are gathered here and to any of you who may be joining us online. If you would follow me, please, to the book of Philippians. We're going to be looking at the very end of Philippians 2 and reading 19 through 30 together as we continue our march through this wonderful letter that Paul wrote to a church that had a lot of joy already but needed to grow in that. Philippians chapter 2, beginning here in verse 19. I hope in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy to you soon, so that I too may be cheered by news of you, for I have no one like him who will be genuinely concerned for your welfare, for they all seek their own interests, not those of Jesus Christ. But you know Timothy's proven worth, how as a son with a father he has served with me in the gospel. I hope therefore to send him just as soon as I see how it will go with me. And I trust in the Lord that shortly I myself will come also. I have thought it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother and fellow worker and fellow soldier, and your messenger and minister to my need, for he has been longing for you all and has been distressed because you heard that he was ill. Indeed, he was ill, near to death, but God had mercy on him, and not only on him, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. I am the more eager to send him, therefore, that you may rejoice at seeing him again, and that I may be less anxious. So receive him in the Lord with all joy, and honor such men. For he nearly died for the work of Christ, risking his life to complete what was lacking in your service to me. In order for a colony to succeed, it needs more than principles on paper. It needs those, but it also needs men and women living in that colony who embody and live out those principles that the colony agrees to live by. And that's why guys in the first part of our country's history, that's why guys like George Washington were so important. And people looked to him and to people like him as men who didn't just sign their names to founding documents like the Declaration and the Constitution and things like that, but who went out and fought British soldiers and in some cases died on battlefields of war so that the principles of freedom and liberty could be lived out in our nation. In the course of the Bible story, God gave founding documents to the Israelites. He gave them the Torah. He gave them the five books of Moses. He gave them further revelations past that. He gave them prophets who pointed back to the first five books of Moses and to the rest of the documents that God gave to the Israelites. But then he gave them Jesus to demonstrate to them, here is what the law ought to look like embodied in a person. Here's what a human should be. And he came down here to colonize planet Earth and to start a movement that has continued to this day. And so in the first part of chapter 2, you remember how we talked about how in 1 through 11 of chapter 2, we've been shown Jesus Christ. There he is in all of his glory. He gave up everything as the founder of our faith. And he set the new covenant in motion. And so Paul explains the operating system of what we are all about there in the first part of the chapter. And then in the middle part of the chapter, he's explaining to us what that looks like in our lives. And now at the end, he's talking about two men who model also what a Christian should look like and how he should be knit together to the hearts of other disciples. Timothy and Epaphroditus are not there at Philippi, but both of them are going to be sent by Paul to this congregation for very particular reasons, because they love the Philippians. And heavenly colonies should be filled with guys like Timothy and Epaphroditus. So we're going to be focusing on those two men in sequential order here. Let's first look at Timothy 19 through 24. We're told about him. And I want you to notice some interesting things about the way Paul phrases these instructions or these elaborations on these men and how they're coming. I want you to notice how Paul himself is willing to sacrifice valuable time with this co-worker who is really important to him in order to receive, in order to get encouraging news from Timothy after he goes and comes back about how this church is doing. Sometimes when Paul placed his co-workers on the chessboard of the churches, he sent them out in order to straighten people out. You know, remember in 1 Timothy 1, remember that's why he left Timothy in Ephesus. He said, I put you there because there are guys who are standing up teaching the law and they have no clue what they're talking about. They need to be shut up. They need to sit down and be quiet, and you need to help them do that, Timothy. Titus was left in Crete so that he could bring order to the chaos in the churches there, so he could appoint shepherds in all of these different towns where there were congregations on that island so that these brethren could have the help that they desperately needed and the shepherding they required. But that is not why he's sending Timothy to Philippi. It's not even primarily for the sake of the Philippians. It's for the sake of him, for the sake of Paul. Because I want to hear good things. I want to be encouraged by hearing about the good that God is doing through you. This is Paul sending the signal of, I really care about you. And I want to know how you're doing. But it took a sacrifice for him to find that out. He couldn't just pick up his iPhone and call over to somebody at Philippi and say, hey, how are you guys doing? He couldn't send a text. He couldn't send an email. And so he had to send one of his trusted guys to make a laborious trip, to take the time to leave Rome, where Paul seems to be at the moment, to go over to Philippi in Macedonia and then to come back. Timothy can't just hop on a plane in Rome and land in Philippi and then take the red-eye flight back home that evening. It's going to take him some time. And so, but he cares about the Philippians enough to deprive himself of this co-worker for however long that it took. If you really care about how other people are doing, it's going to take some sacrifices on your part and on my part as well. Really caring means more than shaking some hands and smiling and offering a cursory, hey, how you doing at a church building, brief conversations. Really caring is going to involve personal hospitality, among many other things, but having people into your own space, about sharing your resources with those people, of repeatedly trying to get together to build a relationship. It means devoting time so that trust can develop, because trust does not happen overnight. People don't just unfold their lives to you at the drop of a hat. They need to feel safe in order for that to happen. I'm sure you're familiar with the saying of Rome wasn't built in a day. The other one is all roads lead to Rome. Maybe there's other ones too. But Rome wasn't built in a day, and neither are relationships, if they're of any kind of substance. So Paul's willing to make those sacrifices. And he's willing to send Timothy because of the character that Timothy has. I want you to notice how Timothy hyperlinks back to the beginning of chapter 2 when it talked about the kind of person that Jesus was and still is to this day, in putting the interests of others ahead of his own. Don't you think it's interesting that travel plans are stuck into the middle of this letter? This is not usually where travel plan discussions go in letters from Paul. In fact, just flip over a couple of pages in your Bibles to Colossians 4. I want to give you an example of this. The end of the Colossian letter, this is where travel plans usually go. Chapter 4, verse 7 of Colossians. Tychicus will tell you about all my activities. He's a beloved brother, faithful minister, fellow servant in the Lord. See, same kind of vocabulary about this guy. I have sent him to you for this very purpose, that you may know how we are and that he may encourage your hearts. And with him, Onesimus, our faithful and beloved brother who is one of you. They will tell you of everything that has taken place here. And then you got Aristarchus, and then you got Mark, and so on and so forth. That's where we get the names popping up of the co-workers who are being sent out. But here in Philippians, they are smack dab in the middle of this whole discussion that Paul has been in. Why is that? Well, again, what's been going on in chapter 2? Again, 1 through 11 of chapter 2 is, here is Jesus Christ. And I believe that that section is the very heart of the letter of Philippians. And then right after that, in 12 through 18, he's saying, here's how you can start to become like Jesus Christ. He is a man of no selfish ambition. And here's how he lived that out. Here's how you can imitate that. And so in verses 19 through 30, I think he's saying, here are two guys who do a really good job of modeling to you what Jesus Christ is. And they're coming to you. And so that's going to provide encouragement for me, but the implication is it's going to be really helpful for you to have these guys in your midst. In verse 22, notice what it says about Timothy. You know his proven worth. They did. This is not the first time that Timothy has been to Philippi. He was there from the start. If you go back to Acts 16, we don't have a specific instance in the story of the congregation of Philippi's origin of Timothy taking a part, but we know from the first part of Acts 16, Timothy was on that trip. So he must have met the Philippian jailer and his family. He must have met Lydia and her household and anybody else who was converted in that church as people heard the name of Jesus for the first time. But he also saw his mentor suffer. He also understood the dangers of what happens to somebody who preaches Jesus Christ, because he saw what happened to Paul and Silas. And so for the average man, he might have thought, oh, I don't want to go back there. Philippi was the place where we got beaten with rods and we got put in the stocks and we got thrown into jail for the first time, or at least co-workers did. But Timothy wants to go because he is genuinely concerned for their welfare. It wasn't a superficial, fake kind of let's get together and smile at each other for a while kind of concern. It was, I want to return to a dangerous place where persecution happened because I want to check on these people. That's a contrast to verse 21, where he gets really frank about the character of other people around him and says, they all seek their own interests. But Timothy is different. That's an interesting verse in 21. Notice how he says, they all. They all. All the Christians near me. Even in the first century churches, there were lots of Christians who weren't terrible people and on a ramrod to the gates of hell, but they were just wrapped up in their own stuff. And so it is to this day. Many, many Christians are simply wrapped up in their own stuff. Prioritizing hobbies over prioritizing struggling in prayer for fellow believers who need a lot of help. Prioritizing physical family over spiritual family. Prioritizing hanging out with the strong instead of associating with the lowly, which what Paul tells us in Romans is exactly what we should be doing. But Timothy was different. He cared. He cared because he was zealously serving a Lord who cares? Remember back in chapter 2, verse 4, let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. Verse 5, that's the mind of Jesus. And so it's interesting that the same kinds of words are being said here about Timothy versus people who are not like Timothy. They all seek their own interests. But Timothy's different. By the way, also, did you notice in chapter 2, verse 7, Jesus was taking the form of a servant. And what do you see about Timothy in 2:22? He served with me in the gospel. Do you see all of the connections being made there? Read your Bibles closely. Those things are there if you look for them. Now also notice how he is this faithful apprentice to Paul. He got himself a gospel mentor, and because he was faithful to Paul, he became a full extension of the work that Paul was doing in the lives of Christians all over the Roman Empire. As a son with a father, he has served with me in the gospel. Paul frequently did not travel by himself. And I don't know that that was necessarily just a safety thing as much as it was a mentoring thing. He wants to take other Christians with him, especially younger men, so that they can see what the work is like, so that they can go off and do the same thing somewhere else. And it's interesting, when you go to 2 Timothy 2, verse 2, the passage that Lon read for us, Paul tells Timothy to do with other guys what Paul had done with him. 2 Timothy 2, verse 2 says, what you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to faithful men so that they'll be able to teach others also. Not all the guys that Paul trained responded to him in the right way. Remember John Mark from our study of the book of Acts? We're actually going to have more to say about John Mark in an upcoming Philippians lesson. But for now, I'll just say John Mark was another one of Paul's trainees who resisted for a while the teaching that Paul was trying to give him. But just like a son would work beside a father in a trade, Timothy faithfully stuck with Paul in teaching people and loving them. And so Paul can send him out now like a warrior sends out an arrow from his bow. Do you remember how Psalm 127 paints the picture of how a father with his children are like arrows, and he sends them out, he aims them, he fires them. And that's exactly the kind of idea here, is verse 23, I'm hoping to send him to you, and then later on, verse 24, I'm going to come as well, or at least I hope to. By the way, if you are a parent of small children, or even of larger children, this is the vision for what God has planned for you as a parent, is to mentor throughout the lives of the next generation, modeling what we're supposed to be like in loving God and loving our neighbor as ourselves, and then explicitly saying to our sons and our daughters, this is what we're doing, this is what you're going to become like too, this is who we are. And this served as a really good example for the Philippians to have a guy like this in their midst, especially as they tried to work out some relationship tensions. It is God's plan for you and for me to both give mentoring and to also receive mentoring for our entire Christian lives. We don't grow out of either one of those responsibilities. We give it and we receive it. So, thought questions for application. Who are you looking to mentor? Is that something that you just stumble into when somebody kind of comes up to you and initiates and says, hey, I would like you to help me? Or is that something that you intentionally cultivate? I'm not saying take on personal projects. People aren't projects like a woodworking project or a clean up the garage project. People are people, human beings made in the image of God. But we can approach relationships with intention to say, here's somebody that I want to form an attachment with so that I can pour into them and help them and encourage them in their Christian walk. Are you doing that? As far as I know, from the language of Acts, it does seem like when Timothy met Paul, Paul took Timothy with him. It was Paul initiating, not Timothy, as far as the implications go, I think, coming to Paul and saying, hey, can I go with you on your trips? Paul understood who he was and then grabbed him and went off on a missionary journey. Is that what you're looking to do with other people around you who might be willing to learn from you? What are you trying to teach them? Are you being intentional about that? So are you looking to give mentoring, but also we need to also ask the companion question of, are you looking to receive mentoring? Throughout our adult years, and especially as we age, we need to intentionally keep up relationships with people who are going to challenge us in healthy ways. Because what we don't want to do is find ourselves in need of spiritual wisdom from other people, but to have distanced ourselves from other Christians so that we are not in a position to receive that need when we need it. When Timothy received his two letters from Paul, they're mentoring letters. I don't know if you've ever thought much about that, but Paul keeps using the language of, I charge you, I charge you, I charge you. You need to do some things, Timothy. Do you think Timothy responded in his mind and his heart when he read those letters and said, man, Paul, you think I was baptized yesterday? You think I'm some kind of a novice? That I don't know that I should preach the gospel in all seasons? That's what an arrogant heart would think and say. But a guy like Timothy, I'm assuming that he read those letters from Paul and he said, yeah, great reminders, Paul. I needed that. I need to be reminded of my charge, even though I've accepted it long before. The fact that Timothy could receive and give mentoring made him a wonderful, effective worker as he visited these local heavenly colonies. So that's Timothy. Now let's turn our attention to the other guy who's mentioned in our Philippians text. This is a man, Epaphroditus, who only shows up in the book of Philippians. Clearly he's an active worker. Clearly he ran around and he helped Paul and he helped the Philippians and he helped a lot of people. But this is the only place in Scripture that we're told anything about this guy and his involvement with Christians. So there's a lot to notice here that is of interest. Again, here is an emphasis on, I'm sending out somebody to you who has been really helpful for me. But he's doing that because he knows that Epaphroditus is going to provide comfort for distressed people. I want you to notice some things about him. So verse 18 of chapter 4. Look over at verse 18 of chapter 4. He comes up again toward the end of the letter. 4:18, I have received full payment and more. I'm well supplied, having received from Epaphroditus the gifts that you sent, a fragrant offering, a sacrifice acceptable and pleasing to God. So evidently he is a courier. He's a Philippian Christian who has now served as a messenger to bring the financial gifts that the Philippians wanted to send to Paul. He's the one that delivered those things. And now he is heading back. By the way, in 2:25, he's also called a messenger. So again, the courier idea here. The Roman government, by the way, had a courier system for itself, but there was no postage system, a postage service for the rest of the empire. And so he fulfills that role. But did you notice how in verse 25 of chapter 2, Paul goes out of his way to heap on the language of the kind of person that Epaphroditus is. You notice the five descriptions here of his role in the church and his character. So he is my brother, he is fellow worker, he is faithful soldier, he is messenger, and he is minister. Why does Paul keep going on and on about the kinds of things that Epaphroditus is doing, the kind of person that he was? Is it because the Philippians don't know who he is? No, he's from Philippi. I believe he's saying all of that to say, I'm sending to you somebody who is just so special to me, somebody who's done so much beside me, but I am wanting to do this because, just like Timothy, this worker had a deep concern for other people. Did you notice in verse 26 that Epaphroditus was distressed? Now, that word distressed in the Greek is a very, very rare word in the New Testament. It only shows up two other places in the Gospels. In fact, if you're taking notes, I'll just go ahead and say those two places. It's Matthew 26, 37, and Mark 14, 33. And both of those places were describing the kind of distress that Jesus himself felt in the Garden of Gethsemane right before he goes to the cross. It's that kind of distress. So this is some real anguish here. This is some turmoil that is churning up in him. Now notice in Philippians 2, why is he distressed? Did you notice the text closely? Is it because he was really sick and almost died? You might expect the text to say that, but that is not what the text says. Did you notice that? He is distressed because he heard that the Philippians had gotten wind of his illness that was really genuinely serious. But like Jesus, he seems much more concerned about the welfare and the safety and the stability of other people, even when he's going through a whole lot of junk. Because what did Jesus say to the women weeping on the side of the road as he went up to his death? Daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me. Weep for yourselves. Weep for your children, because the Romans are coming. Father, forgive them, as he's actually hanging there, naked, beaten to a pulp, taking his last breaths, with his enemies making fun of him and mocking him right below. Father, forgive them, because they don't understand what they're doing. Constantly thinking about others, even in times of great pain. Do you have an outward focus like that? If you're being really honest with yourself, do you mainly get distressed for godly reasons or for selfish ones? If you're anything like me, your toes look black and blue right now. Do you get really upset when you're behind schedule? When you're really annoyed at somebody else and what they're doing to you or around you that you get kind of frazzled about? Do you get distressed when you're inconvenienced, when you're embarrassed, when you're angry? There's a whole spectrum of emotions that we could throw out there and talk about that all have to do with me and you. Or do you primarily get distressed because you know that something has happened that has affected the life of somebody else outside of you and me. That's where his distress was coming from. I think this is interesting because if you look over at chapter 4, verse 6, this is the letter where Paul says, do not be anxious about anything, right? And yet, clearly Epaphroditus is pretty anxious. And in verse 28, did you notice, Paul himself is anxious until he's able to send this guy and let the Philippians know that Epaphroditus is okay. So clearly, it's not wrong or sinful to be anxious inherently, but it is wrong to be anxious about yourself for selfish reasons. Clearly, we should be anxious for each other, but not for ourselves. So that's a wonderful thing to notice about this guy and about the comfort that he could provide. Something else that Paul wants to bring up in this section is that this guy, Epaphroditus, is worthy of extremely high honor because of his sacrificial track record. Because, like Jesus, again, this is hyperlinking back to the first part of chapter 2 in describing who he was and is, he's willing to give up everything. So in verse 26, 27, and 30, we find out he has gone through a terrible physical experience of some kind. I don't know what he was sick with. I don't know how he got sick. I don't know what that looked like. There's just a lot of question marks here. Details are sparse about Epaphroditus. And I think they're sparse because the Philippians already heard about this. You know, he says in there, you guys had heard that he was ill. And so they've gotten some more details that we don't have. And he had almost died in the course of his work. Verse 30 even says he risked his life for the sake of the gospel. I don't know if he like went into a leper colony and converted all of them or something, and then he got it himself. I don't know what this is, but he risked his own skin in order that Jesus' gospel would go forward. And I think we've got to ask the question, what are you risking in order to serve Jesus? Are you risking anything at all? Are you? Are you going to risk looking a little bit awkward in conversations with friends and coworkers in the world when you steer the conversation towards spiritual things? Are you going to risk sounding judgmental by clearly explaining in a loving way what the Bible actually teaches about things that our society think are anathema? Are you going to risk getting less sleep at night because your emotions are wrapped up in the welfare of somebody else's life in this church or outside of it? Are you going to risk inconvenience so that you can share what you have with another brother or sister in our midst who is in dire need of support? If Epaphroditus risked his life, surely you and I can risk some things that fall far short of that high bar for the sake of the gospel. Does this section remind us of Jesus, beginning of chapter 2? Look there in chapter 2, verse 8. And being found in human form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death. And then in 2:27, notice what it says. Notice the similar language. Indeed, he was ill near to death, almost to the point of death. And then verse 30, he nearly died for the work of Christ. And so just like Jesus, this kind of service is what made him worthy of honor. If you go back to chapter 2, verse 8, because Jesus humbled himself, chapter 2, verse 9 happens. Therefore, God has highly exalted him, and he gave him a name that's above every name, so that every knee would bow and every tongue confess that he is Lord. And so, because Epaphroditus is on the same track, in verse 29, he says, honor guys like this. Treat them with respect. So we got to ask ourselves, who do we honor? Who do you honor? This world honors the beautiful, the intelligent, the very highly educated, the rich, the super talented, the powerful. Who should Christians honor? We should honor the hardworking disciples that we know who give up their lives in obvious ways to serve. Circling back to the idea of interest and concern and attention, where do you distribute those things in your life? Are you constantly glued to TikToks or Instagram or memes or posts by celebrities who are really good at entertaining us but not good examples to follow? Do you know more about what the Kelsey brothers are doing than you know about that other person sitting next to you on the pew? Do you know more about Justin Bieber or Taylor Swift or any other celebrity that I could trot out? Some of you are going to know those names, some of you are not. The point is, do you know about what people are doing as you stare at your phone? People that you're not a part of their lives, you're not ever going to be a part of their lives. They're living lives that are outside of Christ, maybe for the moment, that you don't have access to them. Or do you have a plugged-in attention to the people who are really in your life? Do you care about these people? Or do you care about those people? I think the fact that the room got as silent as it did when I'm making this point is evidence of the fact that this is hitting us where it needs to hit us. Please think about this. And again, I will say this again. If you are like me, this drops a hammer right on your toes. Please let it do that to you. Because what we're being taught here, again, building off of what is being said about Jesus and extending it out to the co-workers of Paul and the lives of these Christians who are plugged into each other, is you can't read a sentence in our section without coming away with this idea that because Jesus is knit to us, chapter 2, 1 through 11, then Paul and Timothy and Epaphroditus and anybody else who is like them is going to be following that same example. In fact, if you go to a little bit later on in the text, chapter 3, verse 17, Paul explicitly says this. You got to be like these guys. Chapter 3, verse 17, brothers, join in imitating me, because I'm like this. And keep your eyes on those who walk according to the example that you have in us. These guys are coming. They're coming to this church that isn't about to blow up in a terrible division, but this is a church where tensions simmer under the surface. How do tensions get dealt with? Coming like this, among other things. If you have not put on a heart like Jesus yet, we're going to sing a song that Brent's going to lead in just a minute to give you the opportunity to declare in the presence of many witnesses, to use New Testament language, that you would like to join this movement, this invincible army of King Jesus that has been manifesting for 2,000 years and will keep manifesting until he comes back. If you want to join the church, the group of God's saved people, then we would love to be a part of that. Or if you find that you've joined that movement before in your life, but you are drifting from it, and you want to get back on track, we can pray for you. We can serve you any way that you need to be served. We can love you, because that is the main reason why local churches exist. So please let us fulfill our purpose in helping you, as together we stand and we sing the invitation song.